We will get started. It's hard to tell on my end whether it's recording or not, but hopefully it is. So I thought that today we would look into who we are authentically. And I became intrigued by this subject because of a session that I had with a client yesterday, but also because of last month's session. I became really intrigued by whenever I'm facilitating voice dialogue, like who exactly is watching all this or listening, or who is the self that I refer to in the third person? So the question is, if you're not your mind, like who is the one that's watching the mind or listening to the mind? Now, a few things happened besides last month's session that got me curious. The first thing that got me curious about this subject is I saw something coming through my phone that just snared my attention on how to tell if you're a foreigner that there's an American visiting your country. Right? Because we have, as Americans, and most of the people on this call or that have subscribed to this are Americans, and forgive me if this doesn't relate to you, but just translated, I think we have somebody signed up from Australia, to your own culture. But in America, we definitely have some conditioned cultural norms, you know, things that just really make us Americans, that make us stand out when we're out traveling as Americans. For starters, we wear sneakers. Kind of nobody else does but us, right? We're loud. I think everybody that has traveled knows that, or knows that that's the reputation of Americans. We're loud. We stand at an entrance of a restaurant waiting to be seated. Apparently, this is just a thing that Americans do that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. And I have a good friend who's French, and I was talking to him about this earlier today. And he's like, yeah, nobody else does that. We just go into the restaurant and sit down. Americans also, instead of saying hello, ask, how are you? Which is very confusing to other people. We also ask questions very openly, like, are you guys open? When will you be open tomorrow? Like, where did all the tigers go? Why aren't they in their cage? Like things like that when we're out traveling. Whereas other people from other cultures will just notice that there's no tigers in the cage and just move on. You know, we ask questions. Americans also smile a lot at people, and we're very, very polite. You know, like if we go into a store, hey, do you sell t-shirts? No, we don't. Okay, well, thank you. Have a great day. Apparently that's an American thing. I thought everybody did that. You know, we're just so polite. I remember earlier today, somebody came by to buy a piece of furniture from me today. And she was, her name was Kim, and we'd been corresponding for days. And the amount of time that the transaction occurred was probably 5 minutes. The amount of time that there were pleasantries exchanged was probably an hour. So the French don't do this. You know, I was talking to my friend, like I said earlier, the French, I think the reason why we think the French are so rude is because they're not polite like us. Like apparently this is just a cultural thing. This is something only Americans do. We're super positive. We're very rah-rah. And of course, that affects, this being a conversation about Zen every week, that affects how much we just want to rush through the bad and get to the good. You know, this is where the make it a great day comes from. This is the, you know, turn your day around, you know, create your own positive attitude, all of that, like this rah, rah, got to be good, got to be happy, got to smile, you know, all of that is an American thing. Isn't that kind of crazy? I never really realized that. And I've been to like 80 countries. So Americans come across as superficially friendly. We're also known as big tippers. We use a lot of ice in our drinks. Nobody else does that. And we're super confident. There's a quote, actually. I can't remember who it's by, but I have never seen someone walk so confidently in the wrong direction as an American. And then, of course, we wear baseball caps. And if the song Sweet Caroline comes on, you know what happens next. So these are our cultural imprints. Now, are they good? Are they bad? I mean, some of them I can see as good. Some of them I can see as bad. Of course, one of our cultural imprints, too, is that we see things very distinctly in terms of good or bad. But the question that I want to introduce this week, or this month, I guess it is, are these cultural norms, they're not our natural state. You know, these cultural imprints are things that we've learned. So then the question is, well, what is our natural state, if not all these things? So the second thing that happened that got me intrigued by this subject is a conversation that I had at a dinner party two nights ago, where I had a friend, he's an American, and he was about to head to Europe. He lives there for 3 months every year. And he says, how's your life? And I said, oh my gosh, I've been so busy. I've been doing this, I've been doing that. And I said, I can't stand being busy. Here's how the conversation went. I said, but I'm about 3 months away from not being as busy anymore. And he goes, oh no, you'll find other things to make you busy. I'm like, hell no. And what I said in that moment was, the less busy I am, the happier I am. I hate being busy. And he couldn't believe that I would say that out loud. He actually said, I can't believe you just said that out loud, because that is not a cultural American thing. Now, keep in mind, this guy lives in Europe at least sometimes up to half a year. And so this whole being busy, appearing busy, all of that, you know, this is not happening in Spain where he lives. And this man runs bike tours, and he has Americans come to do these bike tours. And he's had so many clients just confused by all these people sitting in the middle of the day at a coffee bar, just conversing. He's like, what, you know, the clients ask him, what are these people doing? And of course, this is a cultural norm in Europe, in Spain, in France, you know, where it's not so much about being busy, busy like it is here in America. Then the third thing that happened that got me intrigued by this conversation is really regarding last month's call, where I was talking about our being in our heads all the time. And what does that look like? There's a temple in Bali that is very heavily visited by tourists. And apparently the locals like to sit at the entrance because there's a big pothole. And they can always tell the Americans walking in, because the Americans trip and fall into the pothole. And apparently it's wildly entertaining to the locals, because Americans are so in their heads. You know, so last month's call, when I talked about how much in our heads we are, many of us don't realize, even those of us who travel as much as I do, maybe you travel as much too, don't realize that that is an American thing. And the connection is, like, my mind really works in terms of connecting the dots on things, is that being busy and being in our heads are very distinctly tied together. Our cultural norms in America is what keeps us in our heads. And it is the reason why we are in such a fast-paced, kind of always being ahead of ourselves lifestyle. And we have this urgency about us here in America where we're just doing. We're like doing machines instead of being machines. Do, more. Versus those of you who have been to France or Spain, you know, sitting and taking the coffee, like, when you ask an American, what do? They tell you what they do for a living and how they spend their time. And when you ask somebody in France, what do? They're like, what do you mean? You know, first, there's always a shrug involved. What do you mean? I like to take the coffee. I like to read the paper. What are you talking about? They don't even know what we're talking about when we say, what do? Now, I'm not saying it's better in Europe, but it sure is different. And the difference is that we're hustle culture. Hustle. And I mean, I'm mostly comparing us in this point to Europe because that's what's come up for me lately. But in America, it's of course different everywhere we go, Spain, Japan, but keeping in line with American culture, we see our value through our productivity. And because we see our own personal value through how productive we are, we also see the value of other people through how productive they can be for us. So there's a lot of objectification that happens. And I noticed this today. I have people coming and going all day. I have this massive remodel going on, which is why I don't have a nicer background. Because this is kind of a storage room for a bunch of stuff. But I had some people come by today to deliver a tub. And I'm like, okay, what can I get out of these people? Yes, they only have to deliver it to the garage, but can I coerce them into delivering it actually into the bathroom that it's being put in? And can I get them to move some furniture? And can I offer them money to do this? And, you know, in many ways, like, this is heavy manual labor that they weren't expecting to do. And yeah, I tipped them generously, but, you know, there's definitely a certain amount of exploitation that is involved. Like, what kind of work can I get out of this person? It's very, you know, that's me trying to be productive. And the shadow of that is objectification. And so I have a friend, he's a famous rabbi, and he says, if anybody ever performs a service for me, I always make sure that I learn their name. So I made sure that I learned what these guys' names were, because I didn't want to feel like I was exploiting them or objectifying them or just seeing what I can get out of them, even though I was paying them. In America, there's also heavy, heavy competition. And when there's competition, of course, then there's, I'm not you, you're not me. There's isolation. There's a lot of individualism. You know, a lot less connection than, of course, the people that are taking the coffee in the coffee bar for hours every day. Now, how this translates into personal growth and Zen practice and all that, which is what our sessions are about monthly, is that we are consumed with mental activity and this sense of urgency, must do or figure it out. And I see this with so many clients, which is what prompted this. We're kind of circling back to the beginning. This client that I had yesterday, she was just all about figuring it out. I've got to figure it out. I've got to figure out what's wrong with me. Like the urgency. And we don't really realize that that's not a her thing. That's a American her thing. That's our cultural norm. So what do we do? Well, we're all agreeing to participate in these cultural norms, whether we realize it or not. We're all participating in the objectification of the earth and the resources found there, including other people. We are all about individualism. You don't see that in Japan. We're all about, in America, me getting mine before you get yours. And I know that you know what I'm talking about. I mean, we see it all over the place, especially now with COVID. And everybody's just sequestering off and just making sure that their life situation is sorted. Now, yes, we agree to participate in conditioning that comes from American culture, but we also agree to participate in conditioning from your parents as well, which maybe they were Americans, maybe they weren't. I don't know. So in many ways, this whole talk this week isn't about just conditioning from our culture, but from all of these influencers that we have. And the big overriding question throughout this entire talk, which we're going to get to next and help you explore, I'm going to help you explore it physically, is, well, who am I really underneath all this conditioning? So our parents condition us. You know, Kirk, my ex, he was raised on a farm in many ways. You know, he comes from a long lineage of people who have kids in order to do hard work on the farm. And so, you know, it was happening in his generation as well. And he grew up thinking that working hard equates to love. The harder he worked, the more love he felt like he got from his parents. But then, of course, there's the question, is that a core value thing? Is his core value, primary core value, which was a couple months ago, we talked about this, just hard work? You know, was this something that he was born with? How much of your conditioning then is based on parents, or is it actually more conditioning based on core values? There's also conditioning, of course, that comes from your spouse. I have a friend that married a man that really had this impression of what a marriage is supposed to look like. And the wife is supposed to cook dinner and keep the house, and he didn't like to travel. And next thing you know, this woman who loves to travel, who's a bit messy, who loves to have adventures, wound up being a housewife and became very conditioned on who she needed to be in order to please her husband and stay married. Conditioning also, of course, comes from your children. Your children's needs, your children's wants. I have also another friend. I mean, there's been so many people that I've just been observing this in lately. I have the friend that I went to the dinner party with, a Frenchman, who has a super rambunctious son. And like, he was abusive to her. I've never seen anything like it. Everything that came out of his mouth was just cruel. And she was just laid back and really mellow in order to keep the peace. And I'm like, is that really who she is, this mellow person? Or has she adapted to meet her child's needs? Because the last thing she wants to do is fight back and get into constant ridiculous arguments with him, certainly with a new friend around, namely me. I don't know what happens behind closed doors, but we become conditioned because of our children. But all of this, I mean, look at the big picture of all these people that were conditioned to support, you know, just habitual patterns, all of that. It's like, who are we really without all this conditioning? And I mean, it's the ultimate Zen question, to be honest. Who are we? Who is that core person that is the witness when I'm doing voice dialogue? Who are you? Who are you? The ultimate Zen question always comes down to, who are you? And when you strip away the conditioning, you know, what really is left? What do you find? And I want to just pause us and instead of breaking into groups, just unmute yourself. Let's talk amongst ourselves and tell me what your take is on all of this. I mean, I've been talking for 20 minutes. What do you think of this subject? Hello? David, I think you're trying to talk, but it's not coming through very well. Who wants to talk? Who wants to share?
Better?
Yeah. Who wants to share? Are you trying to talk and I just can't hear you?
I can't hear anybody.
Can somebody tell me what's going on?
Yes, we can hear you. Okay. I can't hear David, or I can't hear David. There's two Davids, or Dave. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Wave. Awesome.
All right, so the question is, what do you think of all this? Any musings or comments?
So I'll go, Jennifer.
I'm going to turn the sound down. Go ahead. Jennifer, I heard you say I'll go, but I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, I'm back.
I don't know what happened to Jennifer. It's like I can hear the first sentence and then nothing.
She seems to be muted.
Well, somebody that's unmuted that wants to talk.
I can talk. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. So we were talking about, besides the cultures of the Americans, I guess, not the culture, but who we are, is that correct?
I'm talking about cultural conditioning and just any questions or comments.
Got it.
So this is Jennifer. Can you all hear me? I don't know. We're trying
yes.
to. David is trying to talk too, I think, though. But anyway. So yes. So culturally, you know, being a woman growing up, you know, there was definitely tension to both be accomplished but also be at home. So, you know, trying to balance the expectations that we're gonna have our own career and our own, you know, our own have our own accomplishments individually, but also save just as much energy for family and marriage and children and home and parents and all that other thing. So definitely I don't think I'm alone in saying that the expectations are very, very high.
Which begs the question, how much of our life are we just our authentic self beneath all the riffraff?
So I think that's an interesting question. And how are we going to look at ourselves being the separate between conditioning and who we are?
That's what we're going to explore for the second half of the talk. But I just wanted to give a pause and turn my ringer off. Give a pause and see if you have any questions about what I've outlined so far. And I mean, that's the million-dollar question. You know, how do we find our authentic self, especially if we've been conditioned since a young age? And we continue to be conditioned by the people that we fold into our lives.
Yes.
And okay, anybody have anything else that they want to say? Or I'm going to turn my ringer off. And before we do that, all right. Well, the reason why I'm doing this on video is because I want us to do a physical exercise, and so I want us to stand up. And I want you to move how you normally move throughout your day. Let me just make sure that I can move this up. So stand up now and walk around the room and just notice how you physically move normally. Like, are you a fast mover? Are you a slow mover? Like, this doesn't feel like me. Usually I'm just like, you know, frantic, like, oh my God, I got to do this. Even when I'm having an easeful day, I move from one thing to another. So everybody just walk around like how you normally move. This is how I normally move. And I, of course, I want to walk slowly because that feels more in line with who I am. But how I normally move is not that way. And I really do feel like that's cultural conditioning. So keep moving the way you normally move, and now shift consciously to making it even faster. Let's do that next. Just like really fast. Like the times when you're really late. I mean, I remember one time I broke into a run because I was so late for something and I couldn't find something and somebody had done something that caused a delay and I wanted them to know that I was in a rush. So I started running. I mean, I felt ridiculous. But just move really fast right now. And I'm trying to stay in a box right now because you can see me. I can't see any of you. I want to make sure that you're doing this. But this frantic energy that we sometimes experience, like I've got to do more, you know, oh my gosh, there's not enough time. I have so much to get done. I have a plane to catch later tonight too. It's like I have to have everything done, right? So now that faster experience, just notice if that's familiar in your body and the times that you've also had that kind of pace. And now I want you to move really slow, like a turtle. Not the hare anymore, but the turtle. And still trying to stay within the confines of the camera. But I want you guys to take advantage of a full room. Walk really slowly. And you know, when I see people walking this slowly or operating in the world this slowly or talking this slowly, I actually kind of find them a little annoying. So I know that this isn't my pace either, but just try it on right now. Maybe it's your pace. Now, while you're still standing up, I want you to move in a way that just feels right to you. That feels like it's authentically you. You've tried on super fast. You've tried on super slow. You've tried on everything in between, hopefully, by this point. You just kind of move in a pace that feels like you. Like, how would you be moving normally if it weren't for your conditioning? Move how you want your day to feel physically. Like, this is Kristen's pace. What is your pace? And you can sit back down now if you want. You can keep standing up if that feels kind of more authentically you as well. We're going to check in on this in just a little bit. The physical embodiment of what feels like authentic you, kind of movement and pace. Before we check in, though, I want to add another layer to it. We've heard for millennium that you're made up of mind, body, and soul. That's the slogan at Snowbird, actually, committed to enhancing mind, body, and soul. So presumably, we are made up of three components, mind, your body, and your soul. So you can either stay standing, or you can sit down. And now I just want you to be in your head and think, like my client the other day. And that's all she did. She was just always in her head, always thinking. Was that her or was that her conditioning? So just sit or stand and be in your head and think right now. And notice if this feels like you. Next, I want you to be in your body. Now, to make this shift, I want you to first acknowledge your thoughts, like, what do I want to feel? You know, because your feelings are in your body. But ask yourself, because we're still in our heads at this moment, what do I want to feel? And oftentimes that's American culture. Like, I want to feel happy. I want to feel joy. And what do I want to feel really feels like kind of problem solving mental energy, like I experienced with my client. Like, I don't want to feel this way. I want to feel that way. I don't want to do this. I want to do that. And so, you know, the mind definitely has this kind of problem that we give it to solve, which is I don't want to experience this. I want to experience something else. And oftentimes it's about what we feel. So we've kind of acknowledged the mind, and then we're using the mind to kind of shift into the body instead of kind of being focused on what I want to feel, you know, what, which is probably different than what you are feeling. Shift now into what I actually do feel right now. Next thing you know, you're in your body. What do I feel? And there's an inner listening, and there's a present moment experience that we have whenever we're in our body. The other thing that you can do to be in your body is to move it, move your body however you feel. Like right now, I'm feeling connected to you guys. I'm feeling a little bit nervous. You know, this is a new subject for me, and so I'm feeling a little shy about it. I'm excited about it. So boom, I'm back into my head, but I also feel that in my body too. So move in a way, I can't see you, but you can see me, right? So I'm going to be the guinea pig here, the test rabbit, right? So however you feel inside, make sure that your movements match that experience. What is the experience that you're having in your body? How does your body want to move? With cultural conditioning, how we move our bodies is a certain way. I have a friend that really wants to be seen as a laid-back guy, so he moves his body in a really laid-back way. But that also may be just authentically who he is, too. Notice the times that you felt really agitated, but you move slowly and you move kind of more on purpose. Is that you trying to fit into the cultural norm and conditioning of being a pleasant person that we've come to expect in America? Or is that authentically who you are? So what is your mind in its natural state? Now, what is your body in its natural state? Are you naturally in your head all the time? Or is that cultural conditioning? Or are you naturally in your body all the time? I know, having been a professional athlete, I could assume that I was in my body more than most, but I'm not sure if that's really true. And again, it may be cultural conditioning. So this is also a new subject for me. Like, am I really living in my body? I attended a workshop about living your body more often, and then of course I teach this stuff, and the workshop leader was like, oh, you're so in your head. I'm like, I am? Really? Because I kind of feel like I'm in my body. And so, but she was holding up a mirror and she helped me see that that wasn't necessarily the case. Then we have mind, we have body, and now there's the soul. And the soul, I've asked to speak to the voice of the soul only a few times. And it really feels like it's in not the relative reality, not the Christian reality, but in the infinite reality. So drop off mind and body and become, let's call it infinite consciousness right now, or whatever you want to call it. Some people call it God, some people call it, but God oftentimes is separate, but people can experience that in their bodies too, as, you know, they are God or the Tao. Soul, non-seeking, non-grasping, non-being, emptiness, no self. There are many different words for this place. Like, drop into that space. And to get there, if you want to go through the mind and the body, first you can think about, let's call it infinite consciousness. Think about infinite consciousness. Okay? That's one experience. And now I want you to, and it's a seeking experience. You know, like I'm seeking it. When I'm thinking about it, like, where is it? What is it? Trying to understand it. But of course, you're trying to understand something that's completely non-graspable. And then feel it. So move into your body. Feel infinite consciousness. And the infinite nature of the universe, I always say that the single drop of water contains the whole spring. It's like this soul, this spiritual, this non-thinking, this God, Buddha, nature, you know, whatever you want to call it, is, I also liken it to a river. It's like it's flowing through us all the time. So we can feel it flowing through us. We can feel our being in it. And then the third level is you become it. It's like you dropped off mind and body, that you don't exist anymore. I don't exist anymore as Kristen. And I just allow the soul, or whatever you want to call it, infinite consciousness, to take over my awareness. And next thing you know, even though it's my body and my name, and, you know, I look in the mirror, it still looks like me, but God is having a Kristen experience, or infinite consciousness is having a Kristen experience. Like, the infinite needs my body in order to touch things, you know, and to see things. We'll spend a moment here as well. Our bodies and our minds can be influenced by cultural conditioning. I don't believe that our souls can be. At least that's not what I'm experiencing right now. But in all this, the question is, the koan, the riddle, is, what is it that feels like you? The real you. Without the social conditioning in all of this. So let's open the floor again. And when you unmute yourself to talk, keep yourself unmuted and just take over. Tell me what your experience was like walking, setting the pace, and then going on this journey of mind, body, and soul that feels like the real you.
So unfortunately, I can't... I didn't quite get the movement part because of my injuries. So that did not allow me to experience the different thoughts on the movements of how we are, I guess. I don't know. Too much noise.
When you say too much noise, I'm not sure I follow. What do you mean?
Oh, just too much noise from the pain signals. So if I'm not thinking, if I just think about my body, it rears its ugly head.
So do you spend a lot of your life trying not to think about your body?
Well, recently, yeah.
Has that become your reality then?
For the time being. I'm sorry?
Has that become your reality? Is that become your, you know, if we look at it in terms of voice dialogue, like this, your CEO of your corporation is the one trying not to think about your body?
Well, I guess it is that the just CEO is always being reminded about my body all the time.
Who is the CEO?
It's the person thinking about my body.
or the person trying not to think about your body.
Yeah, well.
So is it fair to say that you've become maybe not conditioned by society or parents, or but conditioned by just an avoidance of trying of pain or of trying to deal, or it's like I see there's two people in your corporation. There's, you know, the mind and the true self and all that, or, you know, whoever the CEO, and then there's the body, and the body's like, pay attention to me. No, I don't want to pay attention to you. Pay attention to me. I don't want to pay attention to you. You know, whoever this one is, we're not quite sure, but is that your life right now?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a unique situation. You know, I just had an ankle surgery a couple weeks ago. So a lot of the pain is due to the surgery, though I'm not sure all the pain is due to the surgery. So I'm trying to square that away. So my body's preoccupied, my mind's preoccupied with trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with the body. Total preoccupation.
Okay. And this is what we go through when we're in a lot of pain. It's true. And if it's going to be pain that's going to be with you for life, then that's a rough life.
I hope not. I'm optimistic that it won't. And but it is what it is right now. So that just that whole circular thought process did not allow me to. You know, I couldn't really speed up my movement. Couldn't do that. I'm kind of stuck in a really slow mode just because of pain. So,
is that your true nature?
No.
Okay. So you're having to compromise your true nature.
Oh yeah.
You know, the one thing that I have always really taken pride in, especially during my ski career, because I had a lot of injuries, and you can do with this information what you want, and maybe you are already doing it, is that whenever I feel pain, I mean, there's two things. First of all, the pain is saying, get yourself to a doctor and you know, get surgery or, you know, whatever. I mean, I've had 9 knee surgeries, and there was only one surgery that I took a single pain pill. And some of these surgeries were pretty big time, like lots of like major reconstructions. And I never took pain pills because I would always become intimate with the pain, which is where I figured out these concepts of being intimate with the fear, to be honest. I mean, that is really where I started learning about this, is my own. And I had a electrolysis before there was laser hair removal, like under my armpits. I can't even tell you how painful it was.
Ouch.
And I even one time had a nerve cluster in my knee, which was like drilling your teeth without anesthesia.
Yeah.
And another time I had a bone marrow extraction without anesthesia. Now think about that.
Gosh.
But I learned this ability, I don't know where it came from, but of just becoming intimate with the pain. And so all of those times I got taken into this transcendent, just like gorgeous state of just complete and utter exquisite suffering.
Ah.
I recommend it.
I like that. It's a new spin.
Because today's conversation is about who is the true self. And when your true self is, you're in pain right now. That's who you are. You're moving slow right now because when you're in pain, you move slow. That's your true self. You follow? So it's not like you don't get to be your true self. You are your true self. Or you're in resistance to your true self because your true self is feeling pain right now.
I think it's, the resistance is big. And I do recall that from the training that you taught me way back in the day. So I am a stubborn SOB when it comes to stuff like that, and I fight it, and it's not the right way to go. So I think I feel pretty good about the conversation here.
Okay.
You just taught me these things. You just taught me.
Yeah. It's the same with hot and with cold. and with suffering and fear. It's all the same. If you merge with it and become intimate with it, like you look at those guys that do these cold plunges, you're like, how do they do that? Well, and why would that ever feel good? It's because they have intimacy with the cold, and so it takes them into a transcendent state. Whenever you have intimacy with any kind of difficulty, be it emotional, physical, pain is the big one, it takes you into a transcendent state. Whenever you have resistance to it, of course, it just doubles your pain.
Right.
So, and keeping with today's theme, it keeps you in your true self state. Like, I am a person, like there's this thing called ikigai, you know, reason for being. Like right now, you know, you're here to heal your heel, or sorry, your ankle. Like that's your reason for being right now, is to recover from, you know, other people, it's recover from cancer or raise this child or, you know, get through this painful divorce. And when you just completely merge into it, you are your authentic true self. Your true self is not on hold until you get through the other side of this difficulty. Your true self is like desperately trying to get your attention, and just merge with whatever is true and you'll find him.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah. Somebody else, what has this been like for you?
Oh.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I noticed that I don't really like if other people speed me up. So going faster than I normally like to do, that doesn't feel right. But I'm also not for going slow either. So it's kind of set my own pace as authentic. But what came to mind here is, though, is I have no idea who I am, because it's like different for different people. Does that make sense at all?
Go ahead.
I'm one person from my family, one person with somebody that I'm in a relationship with, one person with somebody I'm at work with. Then it's all like they're different, like that old Seinfeld show of colliding worlds.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. How much of who we are at work versus who we are at home versus who we are on the weekends with our friends versus who we are when we're by ourselves? Like, if we're completely different in all realms, like, what is that?
Right.
You know, is that just all conditioning?
Yeah. A good question.
it's a koan. It's a riddle. You know, who is the true self? Is it the person that is there on the weekends with their friends who can just finally drop their guard? It, you know, always for me is my true self the one who's at Burning Man?
Right.
You know, because I can drop the charade of being sane. Right.
I kind of like that. Yeah. When I'm being creative and playful, fun, towards that authentic core. But I don't share that with too many people. That's it.
Yeah. It's so interesting. You know, that's why this subject is so fascinating, especially when I think of who I personally was in my marriage. You know, I have been telling people for years that I became my best self. But was that my true self? Anybody else, or do you want to elaborate on that?
Nope.
Let me hear from at least one more person. Who's it going to be?
I thought the exercise of walking fast and slow in your own pace, I definitely found right away that my own pace was in the middle and it was comfortable when I was moving around. And I know I spend a lot of time in my head, and I'm trying to shift to my body more just for direction, for questions and answering or giving me direction about what to do, and looking inward towards the body to answer and give help decide what to do, because the mind's not can't decide. But I do think that I'm generally authentic.
Thank you, Michael, for sharing that, because everybody is offering something so interesting to the conversation that has unmuted themselves. Like it's believed. This was told to me by my teacher, actually, and I've tried to research it and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I don't know if it's true, but I trust my teacher got it from some reliable source somewhere, but that the historical Buddha said that your body is more who you are than your mind because it changes less fast. I'm sure there's a more eloquent way of saying that, but your mind is just, you know, firing 50 thoughts per second. And it's just changing so fast, and it's off to the races over here, and then it's off to the races over there, and it lies, you know, it looks for evidences to support long conditioned beliefs and all that, and it's just, it's kind of crazy, you know, the crazy mind, we could call it. I think the thinking mind and crazy mind are pretty much the same thing. So we can trust more what we feel in our body to be our truth, which is why when we make decisions, you know, it's better to go with your intuition than your mind. Or it depends on the decisions. Like if you're a professional poker player, you know, you might want to go with statistics. If you're a day trader, you might want to go with logic, you know, as well, or mapping patterns. But the best day traders, the best poker players are the ones that bridge the gap between your mind and what you're thinking about and what your body is feeling, your intuitive self. And so our minds obviously have a tremendous gift to offer us. But if we really, if we're talking about the conversation of just who we authentically are, the body wins hands down every time. Or some would say, dropped off mind and body, the soul is actually what wins every time. I do know that I've been saying for a whole year that, oh, I just miss Kirk so much. But the truth is, I miss myself. I miss myself. And we may say, oh, I want money. I want, you know, success. I want, you know, this new car, you know, all these things that we want. Really, what we want is our true self. And we think that the car can maybe, you know, especially if the car reflects, you know, what our style is, you know, that will help us feel like our true selves when we drive it. You know, we pick the color because it feels like, oh, blue, yo, that's so me, you know? And we sometimes get off course, though, and we pick people or jobs or just lifestyles that don't feel right. Like, what is that? That's our soul, you know, coming to claim us and bring us home. So really, it's a matter, what I hope you get out of this is that there's a part of you that's like a feather in your face, just tickling you. You know, are you listening? Are you listening? I'm right here. Get the blue car. You know, say no to this. Don't spend any more time with this person. Do this for a living instead of that for a living. That always is your true self that's calling for you. Is your true self your mind? I think your mind is what gets conditioned. It's like a computer that gets programmed. And maybe nothing more. I don't know. And then there's your body. You know, you can trust what you feel to be true. This doesn't feel right. I just want to move away. This isn't working for me. This is working for me. I want to move toward. So our body, you know, changes as well. It's like a river of emotions flowing through it. Emotions are a very human experience. Where do they come from? Who knows? Probably somewhere cosmic. We're never going to be able to understand that. It's, you know, it's from the snake, but, or the mugger or what have you, like that's where fear comes from. But is it really, you know, where else does it come from? But there's always, and those of you who have come to my ski camp or work with me privately, you know that I talk about false self, and it's probably one of the coolest things I facilitate, the part of you that gets developed from age 2 to 12 that we take on as our core that kind of runs our lives, almost our whole lives. And whenever I facilitate that, there's false self, and then we always end by speaking to the opposite, the voice of true self. And, oh, it's such a moment. And when I ask to speak to true self, I find that I don't need to ask questions, or I shouldn't ask questions, because the second we put a label on it, it kind of cheapens it. So bottom line is, you just know your true self when you feel it, like, this feels like me, this feels right. I'll leave you with some homework. But I want to just give you one more opportunity to ask questions or speak. And especially because we've gone through this COVID experience, this adventure, you know, which has been a hugely transformational, transitional state for you, for me, for all of us. And it can be a potential control-alt-delete on habits. And we're starting to get back out there. As Americans, we are not necessarily anywhere else, thanks to the amazing, you know, free like push to get everybody vaccinated, which is just so impressive. We can now, with that control-alt-delete, like we're rebooting. Can we make conscious choices on who we really are and how much cultural conditioning? Even our soul is conditioned, like body, mind, and spirit, body, mind, soul. Like with religion, you know, we really start to believe that our soul is this conditioning that comes from our religious background. The other thing that's really, really unique to Americans, I forgot to mention this, is how religious we are. You know, that's not so prevalent in Europe, for example. It is in like Islamic countries, but that's a different religion. Like how much of our belief in our soul or spirituality is based on our conditioning. But as we're getting back out there, I kind of went on a tangent. As we're getting back out there after the control alt delete of COVID, you know, what are you going to be next? Who are you going to be next? And how much a part of your core essence, your core, you know, unconditioned, uncultured, like just you, who you were born, the look, who, what your face looked like before your parents were even born, like who are you, is what is now available for you to explore. Any comments or questions? We have a little bit of time for that. All right, if nobody has anything they want to ask or comment on, then here's your homework. my own homework, because I'm not only going through the control alt delete of COVID and now going out in the world and anew, but also going through the transition of losing my whole family and my cats, my mom, my husband. Like, I'm definitely trying to figure out what I identify with. I'm realizing that my pace is a lot slower than it's been. I'm consciously making sure that I walk and talk using that pace. I talk fast, but I walk slowly. I'm actually talking openly about not wanting to be around dogs. which in mountain culture is super taboo. So I'm willing to be forthright about that. I don't know why I don't like dogs. Sorry, dog lovers. I just don't. I don't want to be around them. I don't want to pet them. You know, that, I don't know where that comes from. I'm not going to try to explore it. It's cats I'm obsessed with. Like, that feels authentic to me. I don't know why. I'm willing to say to people that the less busy I am, the happier I am, which for some reason really bugs people in America. I don't know why, but that is just my reality. And I'm really, really looking forward to being less busy, even though I'm writing 3 books. So just notice like little things. And sometimes who we authentically are isn't some big picture, you know, study or belief or, you know, like understanding, like I'm here to raise the level of consciousness on the planet and that's who I am. And, you know, like that stuff is not necessarily, that's like a borrowed answer. You know, just, it's the little stuff. You know, I'm the person that doesn't like avocados, you know, very much. I'm the person who doesn't like dogs. Like just that, those little realizations, it seems like just surface stuff. Well, why is that? Beneath the not liking dogs, like what about dogs don't I like? What does that mean about me? Why do I not like being busy? Why do I, and I don't judge other people who are busy though. Like what is that kind of, just being curious and asking these questions, maybe journaling about them can help you kind of put the puzzle together of who you actually are. And then also your homework is awareness practice. Just to stop and pause and notice, especially physically, what you feel and what your state of being is. And just noticing, am I in a natural state right now? Or am I operating out of some cultural conditioning? That's your new awareness practice. And that's our month. Thank you for engaging in this consciousness practice with me. Serves you, it serves me. Cannot even begin to measure the impact that it has on the whole world. If even one of us becomes a little bit more aware of who we truly authentically are, like that's a huge win for the whole world. Thank you.